to the LL Research Radio program In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, July 1st, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Gary and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website llresearch.org and the community website bringforth.org. Together, they offer over 1,300 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Remember, when submitting questions, this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Austin, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. We all on air and ready to go?
We are.
Here I am.
I am indeed.
All right. Go to our opening riff, which comes from Kuo from a session on April 19th, 2009. Kuo says, "As you continually offer yourselves as instruments of the Creator's love and peace, you shall find great aid in several things. Firstly, you shall find enormous help in entering silence. The tremendous learnings and new awareness with which this time is so rich to those who have ears to hear and hearts to understand offer you many gifts. Just as sleep offers rest to the physical body that it may reset its system and restore the body to the balance, which is its best balance for continued life and growth, just so entering the silence gives your metaphysical body, the energy body, the time of rest and recuperation that it needs from the hustle and bustle of incoming catalysts and hard-won victories. It allows new learnings to be seated in the subconscious mind. It allows new balances to be confirmed and implemented. It sets the system at its best tuning."
Thank you, Austin. What happens when we don't go to sleep for a while? We miss a night. We toss and turn and finally give up and get up at 3:30 and have a cup of tea or lie in bed and look at the ceiling. Well, we feel pretty frazzled after that. Irritable. Cranky, even. And the more sleep we lose, the more cranky we get. And after a while, I think if you're tired enough, it moves into having real problems with thinking, with your logic and your intelligence, your ability to use your intelligence, not distort things because of the fact that your synapses aren't working right. And if you are out of sleep systematically for a while, I think we become dysfunctional. I mean, that is what the psychiatrists say anyway, that we need to sleep enough, we need to dream, we need the activities of sleeping. Dreaming supposedly helps us to take in the things that we've seen during the day, the catalyst that we've had, and install it into the system, plant it into our deeper mind and sort of integrate everything, reset, ready to go. And that's the way we're supposed to be. And if we don't do that, we just are out of touch with our real self. Okay. What happens when you don't enter the silence. Most of us come from a culture which almost demands that you don't enter the silence ever. You never do that because you're supposed to become dumbed down and become consumers, ready to buy the things that are advertised, ready to get the latest gadgets, ready to keep the corporations working, because it's only patriotic to max out your credit cards and owe a tremendous amount of money, because that is what keeps everybody working. You're being helpful to the economy when you do this. I have had this explained to me in detail by my brother, Tommy, who has since learned better how to manage his budget, but still tends to max out his credit card if he doesn't watch it. Most of us do that. Activities involved in keeping up with everything mean that we probably don't enter the silence very much. And those of us who believe in meditation and who meditate probably don't feel that they meditate enough. What is enough? Well, 15 or 20 minutes twice a day is considered enough by transcendental meditators. It feels good to enter the silence. I used to do it as a child and as a teenager, even through college, when I didn't have worldly concerns. I would sit. I would just sit and dream, drift and dream. And finally, after just so long, my mother, if she was sitting in the room with me, would just go crazy. She'd just say, "Carla, get out of the room or do something. I can't stand you just sitting there." And that's how hostile people are towards entering the silence. Get out of the room or do something. Okay. Silence not considered good by mama. That enters the system. I integrate that and realize that even though it feels good, it's not considered a good thing. Even though I like it, even though I hunger for it, not good, not good. Do something. Make some money. Write a paper. Have results for your time on Earth. That's the way you judge people. They've done. Not what they think, not who they are. We don't go to parties and say, "Oh, who are you?" We say, "What do you do?" People aren't even comfortable talking about who they are. They say, "I am a lawyer. I am a school teacher. I am a working mother. I am an at-home mother." Whatever. Whatever their lot in life, that is how they identify themselves. Our society has no idea how to deal with the essence. Not the essence of butterflies, not the essence of people. Where is spirit in our society? It is relegated to an hour on Sunday, an hour during which we still don't enter the silence. We sing, we listen to sermons, we learn from the Bible, we do psalms together. It's silence. What's silence? You can't find it in most church services. You can in some. I'm not saying you can't find it at all. I'm saying that it is seldom to find a church that sits in meditation for even a minute. I remember one time I was instructed by my pastor, an Anglican priest who wanted me to read a psalm and then a lesson, and he wanted 30 seconds of silence in between. While I was counting off the 30 seconds, the organist choir mister almost panicked and started playing something because she thought that I'd forgotten what I was doing up there. She said she was never so glad to hear me start reading. We can't stand silence. I think about 7 seconds of silence is about all that we can take. And then we have to pray or read something or sing something in our church services. That's my experience from a lifetime of attending the Episcopal Church. So where can you go to have a meditation? Well, our meditation group is going to become active again. And so somebody can come and have a meditation in our house once a week. We used to do it every night, but that was a long time ago, past. We just don't even think of it now. And I don't know if people could attend. They are too busy. It used to be at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and people would drive in from the country and come in from the city to meditate with us because they were eager and they were hungry. Somehow it's hard to find a group of young people that can do that, even though they're in college and really, you know, have the time if they want a budget time. That's where we were when this happened. We were college age, we're a little bit older. But the world is too much with us, to us. It's up to us as individuals to enter the silence. Most of us know that what Ross said is probably true, that it's the key to everything. The key is silence, Ross said. Talking about the magical personality, talking about becoming a magical person. To everything, the key is silence. When shall we grapple? I don't know, but I say let's do it. And if we're already doing it a little bit, let's do it more. Until we feel that our spirit is awake, alert, and ready. Reset, checked out, and alive within us, growing, thriving, healthy. Yes. May we aim for that with an arrow as straight as any Zen master ever fired one. Amen.
Thank you, Carla. We have a caller. Caller from area code 801. You are now on the air. With whom are we speaking?
Hi, everybody. This is JP from Utah calling.
Hey, JP.
I have a feeling it was you, JP. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Calling on a pseudo Tuesday. July has 5 Tuesdays, so actually, in my clock, it's the last Tuesday in June. So that's why I'm calling in. I got a 2-part question. It's kind of dumb and petty, but it's just the kind of guy I am. I'm curious about a lot of simple things I probably shouldn't be wasting my time on. But
oh, come on.
All the great teachers, Carla, Jim, Wynn, Barbara, David, and especially even in book 1, section 17 of the Law of One. It uses the words 51%. That's the thing that I'm shooting for. But is that 51%? Is that a metaphor or a symbol or an icon, or is it somehow an actual algorithm and some cosmic computer is tabulating all of our actions? And then the second part, it talks about the open heart. But do any of the other Christhood aspects play into the formulation, the service, the forgiveness, the compassion, love, or is it just the open heart? That's my questions. Thanks, guys.
Well, let's take this one at a time, okay?
Okay.
51%. I always thought I just meant that you needed to be thinking about service to others as opposed to goofing off or thinking about service to self more than half the time. You know, the bigger half of your sandwich to somebody else before you eat. That's a metaphor. I will identify that as such. I suppose an algorithm. I sort of like that idea. Have at it, guys.
To be completely honest, I was never a big fan of the percentages that Don asked about. For one thing, like JP is asking, there's no real clarification for what exactly those percentages are, what it really means. It's kind of vague, and I think the best interpretation would probably be what... But there are other places in the Law of One that discuss harvestability in terms that are easier for me to understand, and that's two different aspects, being overall balance, and there's one question and answer in session 49, question 6, where they discuss the chakra system and the coiled serpent moving upwards through the chakra system. And basically, the way I interpret it, as Ross says, basically as the coiled serpent approaches between the green ray and the blue ray, that's when harvestability is nigh. And other places in the material, they emphasize over and over again the key of balance. They say even the most fragile entity with rather weak energy centers, as long as they are sufficiently balanced, they can still handle the harvest. So the percentages have always confused me, and I've looked to other places in the Law of One to discuss the requirements for harvest.
In other words, you're with him. You don't dig the percentages at all.
Yeah, they haven't made a lot of sense to me. And I like the other descriptions. I think the thinking of things in terms of the energy centers,
yeah.
Because then we can look at how it applies to our everyday life. We can analyze our catalyst and try to figure out where our blockages are, where our imbalances are. And then just the idea of balance in general, I've always liked that as sort of a goal to achieve and something to be striving for.
So that's where you get into the things like actual forgiveness and service and, you know, more linear ways of seeing the results of an open heart.
Yeah, linear is a good way to put it. I guess with our third density linear minds, it just makes more sense to me. And then something like you say forgiveness, you can kind of look at what's keeping you from forgiveness, and then that's where your imbalance lies. And then you address that, and I think that would naturally lead you to the percentages that Ross was talking about, whatever they are referring to exactly.
I haven't heard from you. What about you?
Well, what I get out of the percentages is that for the positively oriented entity to make graduation into fourth density, that you really just have to intend more to be of service to others than you intend to be of service to yourself. Because it's the path of that which is, as Ross said later on, I think it's an easier path. You don't have to be as conscious and as disciplined as you do on the negative path, because the negative path being the path of that which is not, you know, separation, You must be very disciplined and very conscious and be working very hard.
I mean, you can't love anybody.
You love yourself in all your actions, whether they seem like they're loving of others or not. You're consciously working on having others serve you and the negative polarity. So it's something that has to be done very consciously and continuously and in a very disciplined fashion. It takes a lot of work. It's a much more difficult path. So that's what I get out of the percentages, is that the negative entities have got a real hard path, and the positive entities have got an easier path, and eventually it will require that you become more disciplined as you get into higher densities and more focused. But in the third density, you just have to want to be of service to others and have to try to be of service to others and intend it.
Why do you think that's true?
Well, because the positively oriented path follows the path of the way things really are, the way things really work. We're all one. There is no separation. You have to work really hard to create a separation and to follow that path of separation. So the positive entity has a path laid out for him or her that actually exists and is the fiber and the fabric of the creation. It's just the way things work.
I kind of think it's true because fourth density is the first density that is a spiritual base rather than a chemical, physical base. And so thoughts are things then. So your intention is a thought. And in this realm, it's not a lot. But in the next realm, it's a thing. It's an actual thought that is a thing. It's living. So you're creating something in spirit rather than something in the physical world. That's sort of the way I think about intention. What do you think about that?
I think the intentions are something like the faith that Ross speaks about, faith and will being the two real important qualities that a seeker needs to exhibit in order to work towards becoming an adept, to becoming more conscious in the seeking process. And the intentions, I think, exhibit the faith the entity has that something will come from attempting to be of service and intending to be of service. And by continuing to travel that path, to have those intentions of being of service to others, and the will is also developed so that you become an entity that is able to travel in a conscious fashion and to accelerate your own growth.
Like more and more able to make those intentions backed up with action.
Right, to be more effective in your seeking, in other words.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Hit the mark.
Well, yeah. Well, Gary, what do you think? I haven't heard from you.
And there's a infinite universe of transient and not really important questions, and I don't think these are that sorts of questions, JP. I think they're good questions. But otherwise, I don't have anything further to add. I'm just enjoying listening to you guys.
Well, that's a big help from the best talker among us.
He didn't get much sleep last night.
Your spirit's shut down for the day. Great. What a time to take a day off.
I think he's our battery today.
Usually you're so with it that it's scary.
Scary Gary?
Scary Gary. I don't mean terribly scary in the physical sense. I mean, I'm
look at him often, go.
often in awe at the amount of things that you're able to pull in on any given subject.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, you're not doing it today. Good to know. Even Gary can shut down sometimes. Okay. Well, I guess that is anybody else going to anything else on that first part?
That's all for me.
How about you?
I'm done.
Okay. Oh, you said that's all for me.
Yeah.
I thought you said there's also me, and I thought, oh, my God, I thought we had spoken.
Okay,
second question. Who remembers it thoroughly and wants to say it or should our friend say it again.
JP, what was the second part of your question?
Well, I was just wondering, all the books I've read talks about the open heart, and I kind of affirmed that all that counts, but I would think that the service, the forgiveness, the compassion, the love, all the other Christian, all the other Christhood attributes have to somehow work and influence this 51%. Those are big aspects of our personality also.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense to me, and that's a bit of how I was approaching it too, especially in terms of chakra. If you look at open heart sort of in a literal energy sense in the heart chakra, that's sort of where your forgiveness and compassion and a lot of those things, the higher spiritual teachings, come from. And I think, I'm not sure exactly how, because I don't know exactly what the 51% is, but I'm sure that it influences that 51%.
It seems like there has to be a birthing place for action of a positive nature, a stable that the Christ can be born in. And I think the open heart is it. I have a picture of my heart where I envision it as the straw of the stable, and I enter it and I kneel in that rough straw. And I look at the Father, Mother, and I ask Him for help, you know. And I go into His lap, and I am often so weary, and He puts His arms around me. And He looks at me with those eyes of love that I've always homed in on for my faith. And just soak up the comfort of the Lord. However people envision that, there's a birthing place in the open heart. The open heart is the heart, the metaphysical equal of the beating heart of our physical body. The pump that, you know, gives us the energy for everything that we do. And in spirit, and what do we do in spirit? But I mean, you know, the way the chakras are given, both open heart and the Blu-ray, which is honesty. I think honesty for people is the hardest thing to achieve in this. In this whole density, just sheer, simple, bullheaded, tell the truth, honesty, telling the truth of your heart, telling the truth of your being, and it is often given for you to create a way. I mean, it calls on every speck of creativity you've got, because how do you be honest to people that are hostile to that? And then so you find yourself creating the best way to present honesty, to present your honest view, that won't just shut them up, that will allow them to continue listening to you. It's a challenge, I think. And it's worthy. It's worth working at, because it's from each other that we get our main catalyst. So if you're honest with each other, if you're honest with everybody in your life, they can like you, they can hate you, but they like or hate the real you. You know, you don't have to go through masks to know. I mean, maybe you may have to go through their masks, but they don't have to go through yours, because you're not wearing any. You just put them down to tell the truth, and you sacrifice a lot that way. You sacrifice any hope you may have of impressing people, that's for sure, if you're honest. But if you're honest you don't play any games anymore. Nobody's playing. You can't. Nobody can play games with you because you're just being yourself. And I love that. I love that feeling of standing on my own 2 feet, meditating, and being me. And this is who I am. And I depend on that feeling. If I can't be there, I feel uncomfortable. So what I'm sort of babbling about is I think that if you have the open heart, the manifestations, like forgiving somebody instead of judging them, come automatically. The impulse to be forgiving comes from loving somebody more than you love your own feelings, because maybe the way they are hurts your feelings, but that's okay. You love them anyway. It doesn't matter what you feel. You're loving their soul. You're not loving their behavior. You're piercing through the mask and you're loving their soul. And you want to forgive that soul. You want to help that soul. You want to support that soul. And so you find anything that you can do to support that soul. And those supporting things are things like forgiving them and supporting them, you know, verbally and backing them up, even with your actions, whatever that may be, money or time. Sometimes people don't want the truth. Sometimes people don't want you to help them by giving them your opinion. They just want you to listen. You have to love people enough to shut up and listen. And a lot comes from that. Does that make any sense to anybody?
Certainly makes sense to me.
Indeed.
Only thing I would add is just a thought I had in talking about honesty, and that's the honesty is also an inward honesty that requires an outward honesty, and that's a difficult thing to come by also, I think, in helping us identify our own masks, because we put on masks as we grow up to help us cope with being in society and dealing with people, and those masks become part of us, and we don't realize always that we're wearing masks. And so the inward honesty is also a part of the outward honesty.
Do you think that we ever strip all the masks away from ourselves to find our true essence, ever get to know ourselves?
Well, I think that's where meditation is so handy. I think meditation offers the opportunity for us to get down below the masks and find that still, small voice that is honest and give us a real accurate appraisal of what we are thinking, what we want, and just basically what's happening. So, yeah, I think that it does take some effort, but I think meditation offers that opportunity.
Ross said in the poker player analogy that the player lays their cards. The player is dealt and redealt different cards, and they say something like, during the course of the incarnation, you begin, and we stress only begin to know your own cards. Surat emphasized that point.
Mm. I can't remember what poet called our hearts the rag and bone shop. I love that phrase because it so clearly identifies reality, you know, as a spiritual thing. It's certainly not linear. Poetry's never linear, but it really gets to me and reminds me that there's nothing about our hearts, our true hearts, our essence. They contain the entire shadow side, you know. How many people want to know their shadow side all together? But we need to know it and integrate it into our personality as a waking person before we're done knowing ourselves. So I think we have a lifelong job, just getting to know us. we the murderer, we the sneaky person of, you know, many different levels in many different ways. And getting the irritation, you know, focused enough to stamp it out. Do something about it. Redeem it. And can it be redeemed? I mean, I think most people feel it cannot be redeemed. We cannot redeem our shadow side. We somehow need to overcome it. And Rush said, no, do not overcome. That which is overcome is held close to the heart. You have to just love it, hug it, bring it to your heart. How? You know, how?
Well, I think the how part comes from continuing to discover our catalyst, what it is that we're here to work on. It takes a while for a conscious seeker to figure out that there's a certain recurring or a few recurring patterns in the life that can give you an indication of why you're here, so that you can begin working on those things, and that begins to make it a more conscious process, so that this redeeming can occur. What happens, I think, in the redemption is that that little child that was told no so many times and spanked for, you know, expressing an authentic opinion because it didn't fit within the current box that was being shared with others.
Real small box.
I think the shadow side develops from this constant acculturation process that's sometimes not really thoughtful, and certainly not with an open heart, and not with the child's best interest in mind. And it will take a while for us to find those places where we've been blocked in expressing our humanity, and be able to express will allow the reintegration of the shadow side into the overall personality, and therefore its redemption.
Mm-hmm.
We redeem ourselves working on ourselves.
That makes sense when you say it.
Anything else to add, Gary?
Nope. I think you guys did a great job.
Well, I'd like to hear about a follow-up question. What haven't we satisfied you with? I mean, the only thing I have left to say, Jay, is that I think Rob was a level deeper than people making laundry lists of what an open heart looks like. You know, you make laundry lists of so many things, you know, Christmas list of gifts you have to give and what you want to give and, you know, for Christmas. And to-do lists for the daily round of activities. And people say, well, what is goodness? And you make a laundry list of good actions. But what prompts the actions? You know, I think Ra was at the level of the generation of the intention to act well, to act honorably, to do the right thing, to be forgiving, to work to become forgiving. And and the list of how that looks is in its way a laundry list. And the open heart is a simple, basic way of describing the place that generates all those feelings, whatever they may be. Does that make sense, Jay?
Yes, it does. It really does. What you said has given me great peace and great hope. So
I am so glad. I am so glad that wasn't
up. All I would like to end in saying is 2 weeks from Tuesday tomorrow, 2 weeks from Wednesday tomorrow is a very, very special day. And I just want to say that I love you as a sister. I bless you as a fellow Christhood person, and I wish you many, 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 and this very happy birthday to you on the 16th.
Well, thank you. You know my birthday. Well, thank you so much. I love birthdays. And I'm looking forward to my 71st with the greatest joy you can imagine. Thank you so much, Jay. That means a lot.
You're so welcome. Bye, everybody. Thank you so much,
JP.
Bye, JP.
Okay, and we have... had a caller who indicated they wished to ask a question, but it says they're still on, but they are not indicating they want to ask a question. So, caller, if you would like to ask us a question, go ahead, press 1, and we'll get you on air. Otherwise, we'll go ahead and get on to our... There we go. All right. Caller from area code 306, you are now on the air. With whom are we speaking?
Hi, my name's Lori.
Hi, Lori. How are you today?
Hi.
What can we do for you?
What kind of questions are you taking today?
We sort of just address general spiritual questions kind of from a human perspective. We do get a lot of callers who are looking for a sort of psychic reading. Is that what you were looking for?
Well, I'm wondering about, do you do, like, healing requests or prayer requests? Or I'm wondering how I'm going to support my friend who is in the process of dying. Like, how do I handle
right.
that?
We might be able to discuss that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Jim, we don't have all the time in the world.
Oh.
You're more terse than most. Why don't you start?
How, like, what would be the most important thing to do for him?
A dying person as he prepares for his trip.
Well,
yeah.
I think, being in the presence and spending time with them, of course, is the obvious. And just talking and seeing what their needs and desires are. And you find, I think, I have in the past, that when people are knowing that they're going to die, that they begin to search more fully into what it is to be alive and what it is to die and what's next and what's the meaning of life and all of that. And just be available for conversation and try to open the heart as much as possible and to share love. The process that they're going through is a very sacred one. It's moving from this illusion to one that isn't so densely packed with things that obscure the truth. Immediately after death, things will begin to become clearer, and the veil will begin to drop, and the person will begin to move into a light and begin to feel and sense the self as being a portion of the Creator. And if you can give the person reassurance that, you know, this path is very holy, very solid, and very much a part of life, that life does not end with the physical death, that it goes on, you know.
It's like coming home after a trip.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to unpack a suitcase. That is what's happened during this incarnation.
Okay.
To look at it and see what he's brought home. What he's brought home that he thinks is worth anything. He'll throw out the junk and keep the treasures. And then give the treasures to the Creator. And then find out, well, what do I want to learn next? What do I need next? And so there's this wonderful adventure waiting where you find out how you did. And if you need healing, you get the healing. And then after you're all healed up and your incarnation is healed, then you get to work on what goes next for you. You know, do you want to rest a while? Do you want to take advantage of your new situation and go on another trip to serve and learn and, you know, like so? You know, I think looking at it as a shift in your life rather than an end or a beginning, I mean, it's a shift. You're going from looking at life through a physical lens to looking at life through an electrical body lens. And the electrical body lens can let in a lot more light and can give you a lot more information. And as Austin was talking about, probably give you a tremendous sense of balance because you can see the truth in all that there is, much more so. And so I think there's tremendous hope in dying, that hope you will be healed and you will go on to even greater things than you've done here. And if you don't... done greater things, you can explore that. You'd be surprised at what is valued. you know, any time that you've gotten real about anything, studying a butterfly. If you've just looked at a butterfly one day and just gotten into total harmony with that butterfly and flown around with it for a while and loved it and seen its beauty and, you know, it became real to you and you saw its essence while it gave its brief life for you. That's a treasure that you'll be able to give to the Creator about who he is or who it is. I have trouble with
yeah.
I always want to give it a sex. You know, it's Father
yeah.
God, Mother God, whatever.
Yeah.
Right. Talk to him about getting real. Talk to him about the trip. You know, has he gotten familiar with the concept of the steps of light?
The steps of light?
The steps of light, yeah. Ra talks about the steps of light as why don't you tell that? Because you're terse and we have, you know, like 12 minutes to describe it. This is an important question here. Do you guys agree that Jim should go first?
Well, why don't you see if anybody else got something to say?
Yeah, so that's what I'm asking.
I could probably. I don't think Julie's familiar with raw material, so I think I could probably try to describe what that means to go through the steps of light.
All right.
And basically, what steps of light refer to is as we go through our incarnations, through reincarnation. We learn lessons and become more and more in tune with our true being, which is part of the Creator. And through that, we move closer and closer to going home to the Creator. And so one way to look at this is walking the steps of light. As we get closer and closer to the Creator, the light becomes more and more intense and more packed full of life and packed full of information. But we can't handle the fullness of the Creator, and it has to be a gradual process, which is what the steps refer to as we, after we pass through on in this incarnation, we go on to determine the next incarnation, how much light we can handle, how much love from the Creator we're actually able to handle in our next incarnation. And then once we get to the point where we can't get any closer to the Creator, we go back in to learn more lessons and basically repeat that until we're able to finally go home, I guess, is the best way I can describe it.
So you can only handle so much light at a time?
Essentially, right, because if you think about it, if we're trying to go home to the Creator, we are in a gradual process, and we can't handle the fullness of the Creator as we are at this moment right now. And it, basically, that's where we're trying to get back to, and we basically learn more and more about ourselves as the Creator, and we're able to accept the Creator into our lives more and more as we learn more and more lessons and go through more and more incarnations.
So, I mean, it's a very... Ra gave you the idea of the steps of light guarded by the angels and guardians so that those gradations of light are very carefully preserved. And you walk until you can go no further. And then you check and say, well, is that still in third density, or is that still in, did we make it to fourth density? Have we graduated? I mean, graduation is as simple as that. Did we walk over that line where the light got more intense than third density and became a different density of light, more dense? And, you know, it's easier to understand fourth density, I think, if you think of it in terms of how much information can we handle? Well, we can't handle fourth density for the most part here. We can't handle the amount of truth it takes. So here we are, you know, guarded carefully with a quarantine and a veil. Well, can we go beyond that now? Can we make it to a higher realm where everything is open and we know things about everybody and they know things about us that in this density are hidden? And guarded. Well, can we? Can we live with that much light? And when you walk the steps of light, you know, you're sitting there, I love this light, I'm getting a tan, this is so terrific, you know, and then you get to the place where it's like, oh, God, I'm going to get sunburned, I need to go home, you know, put some stuff on my face and arms and take care of the sunburn. And so I think, you know, metaphysically it's like that, you know, and you get to where you feel like, well, I'm going to get a metaphysical sunburn. I can't do this on a, you know, I can do it from time to time, but I can't do it on a steady basis. So, okay, move back one. And if you're comfortable, yeah, I can do this all the time. Okay, then is that third density or is that fourth density, or are you lucky and you've made it to a higher density where you came from, you know, in the original, and you get to go home. I think that is my hope, to make it back to my native density and, you know, meet up with all my buddies from there and start another adventure. I don't know if I can make it back or not. We'll see when I do walk the steps of light. And I look forward to the experience, but I certainly am not done here, and so I'm holding on to life with teeth and nails and toenails and, you know, everything I've got, because I want to finish giving what I have to this density. You know, I want to finish what I came to do. So, I mean, it's only natural. So I don't want to leave yet, but I'm not avoiding the experience. I just don't want it to come soon.
Yeah, because you're not done.
Yeah, I'm not done. And I want to be done. I want to have that feeling of, okay, I can sit back and rock for a while. You know, just rock. Not try to create anything, not try to listen to anybody anymore. Not, you know, I'm done. And I won't have that feeling. I'm not sure I will ever have that feeling of being done. And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'll die anyway. The Lord is done. I don't have to agree. So, some people get done quicker than others. Some people came to do just a certain amount of things. It might be that your son is done. I mean, it could be that he came and did everything he wanted to do. He checked off everything on his list. He learned everything he intended to learn. He served as he intended to serve.
Oh, it's my friend. My friend.
Oh, your friend. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It might be that's true of your friend, and you might suggest it to him. It's, you know, he might be done. He has to, you know, check with himself to see if that resonates. But it's a comforting thought that the Creator knows when you're done.
Yeah.
It's not wrong. So.
Yeah.
Julie, you call the radio show that is hosted by a small nonprofit in Kentucky. And at this nonprofit, we, Carla and Jim specifically, have been channeling for a lot of years and have produced information from channeled sources that describes the universe in philosophical terms, and in that philosophy they speak of densities, which is a term that's kind of synonymous with dimensions of experience, and they give a whole story about the way evolution works, humanity's role in the universe, what we're doing here, etc. And a lot of those concepts, I don't know that they're going to be terribly helpful to someone at this stage in their life. That is, concepts about which density are you in, because I mean, they're part of a much larger story that takes a lot of context to understand.
Uh-huh.
So I haven't personally experienced a death of a close loved one as you are experiencing, but I would imagine that in the direction that Jim was headed, that you would want to help them to become as fearless as possible. And not by judging their own fear, but by giving them an alternative perspective that does not have fear, but helps them to know the rightness of the transition that they're moving through. Like Carla mentioned, it's a shift. And anything that can help build or instill courage in their heart to go through this with as little fear, with readiness, with acceptance and surrender and serenity, to help them be at peace through this. Because the worst aspect of death, besides, of course, any physical pain that accompanies death, is the abject and mortal fear of what's to come, and all the suffering that that fear may cause. So if you can speak to that, if you can hear that and see where that fear is, and help them to be courageous, I would think that that would be a great service. I would also think that people at that point in their life would probably have a tendency, like Jim was saying, to reflect on their life, where they've been, to assess their life, to evaluate their life. And who wants to go out with regrets or with a judgment for things that they've done in the past? So listening to them, if they are engaged in that reflection process, maybe assist in a gentle and a subtle way to help them to lift any judgment they may have or regrets that they may have, and help them to know that whatever they did in life, they did the best that they could do then, and that they need to, when it's time to move on, they can do so with a clear heart, with a heart that has forgiven the path that they have walked, whether that whether they deem they've done well or unwell. Know that all is well, and that they've done the best that they can do, and that they should love where they've been and love who they are. And in that service, I think just as Jim was saying, just being with the person is of enormous aid, because there has to be a great sense of loneliness in passing on, in dropping the physical vehicle. So having somebody there just emanating love, even without words, but just fully present with the person, just sharing love, holding their hand. Went to a meditation workshop where a Buddhist teacher was describing how it can be very helpful if you link your breathing cycles with the person you're with, and just quietly sit with them and breathe in with them and breathe out with them. And that's a way to kind of synchronize your energy and share energy and support in a passive, in a silent way, but nevertheless a very strong and fundamental way. So that would be my thoughts on
how
one
can
serve
really
somebody in this.
You're here. Gary ends with an absolute discussion. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
That was very poignant, Gary. I hope that we helped you some, Julie.
Oh, yeah. That helps a lot.
We love you, and we love your friend. So we'll just
thank
you with that.
Yes, love,
thank
love
you.
And your friend, and thank you. And we have about a minute left, so we can go ahead and wrap up. Any last words you'd like to say to listeners, Carla?
We love you all. We truly do. And please write us if you have any questions.
Yes, please. Please write us with some questions. We are getting close to running out of some questions to talk about. So anything, if you just are curious about any kind of spiritual topic, please keep it a little spiritual, but, you know, just... If you want to hear us talk about anything, just write us. You can find instructions.
You know, what do we know? But we're welcome to share what we got.
Yeah, we'll chat all day long. Carly, you like to say bozos on the bus. We're just bozos on the bus.
We're bozos, and we know that we can share with you. So, outtake, whatever.
All right. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those of you who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read our instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Have a wonderful week. We'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Talk with you then.
I land on an island coast, and only souls I see are ghosts. I run through a wooded aisle and chase the sunlight mile after mile. And I feel like I know this place, as a tree line breaks in the wide open space. I stare at a bright red sun, search all day and never find anyone. stars.